Thursday Night Talk, of course, right here on KHSU. Tonight, Eric Kirk will be our host. As always, we welcome your contributions. Please give us a call at 826-4805. If you're out of the area, toll free at 800-640-5911 and to our text line 492-KHSU.
Thank you, Michael. So my guest tonight is the Reverend Brian Jessup. He is with the Humboldt Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We have to always remember the Universalist part. People tend to forget that.
Yes.
You've been with the Fellowship for how many years now?
Four years.
Mm-hmm. Been here. And, of course, you know, it's located out in Bayside, a real beautiful location, and he meets every Sunday. I will disclose that I also attended. I'm not really the most church or even fellowship going person, but I do go there every once in a while. I think my wife goes more than I do, but I do go, and I've been fascinated with it for many years, in and out of different fellowships. We want to talk a little bit about what that means. But our topic tonight is, you know, what does it mean to be a person of faith in the 21st century? And actually, I should start the whole thing. What does it mean to believe in God? And what does it mean to be a person of faith in a society which resists the very concept? And Brian, you want to start out a little bit with that?
Well, I want to start out by thanking you for having me here. And I want to thank KHSU and this program and so many others that really promote civil dialogue, where we meet one another in all our diversity, and where with a commonality of our humanness we can begin to listen to one another. I think that really is important, and that's a good place to begin with religion in the 21st century in our country, and it certainly feels, I think, a lot of times like society resists the very concept of being a person of faith.
And that's, broadly speaking, whether it's faith in God or faith in humanity or faith in hope, I mean, it can mean
yes,
a lot of things.
Yes. Looking at your question, I began with that, well, does the society really resist it? And I think it's just very, very complex. Mm-hmm. Our society is nominally secular, and the First Amendment states that prevents the Congress from making any law respecting the establishment of a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Right.
So we're nominally sexual. Well, we're nominally sexual too, but it's secular is what I'm trying to say.
That's right. Yeah.
But in fact, our society is based, it's a values-based society. Part of the difficulty of talking about values is that inevitably they're complex. So in the preamble to the Constitution, it says it speaks of we're establishing this country to promote justice and ensure domestic tranquility and provide for the common defense and promote the general welfare and protect the liberty. So all those are really value,
pursuit of happiness,
value laden concepts, and they're complex in and of themselves. And then in the Declaration of Independence, just like you say, it says self-evident that people are created equal. That's a faith statement.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a faith statement that all people are created equal.
And to state that it's self-evident is mathematically we talk about postulates and theorems.
Yes.
Are assertions which can be proven within the dictates of mathematical rules. Postulates can't be proven. They are simply the principles that we agree with that can't be they're either self-evident and you either agree or you don't. And
yes,
if you believe that we're created equal, we can argue about what that means practically and all of that, but that is a premise that our society is at least in theory built on and in aspiration.
Yes.
And, you know, to the degree that we fail to accomplish it on so many levels is true. But then, you know, it's a 250-year-old experiment.
Yes, it is. It is an experiment. And there was a speaker who came with the Equity Alliance here, and I'm now it wasn't John Powell, but it was the man who came after John Powell, and I hope I remember his name, but he said that very thing. He said, we talk about the foundation of our country, but in fact it's still founding, and we're still having the conversation. So around a statement like it's self-evident that human beings are created equal, we have not lived that way, and it's been an argument about what does that mean.
No, right out of the gate, the very same documents we were reinforcing slavery and other oppressive
situations. Unfortunately, our whole country was. We had these wonderful Enlightenment ideals from Western Europe, and they came to this continent and immediately began working against themselves by practicing genocide against Native Americans and enslavement of folks from Africa. So one of the reasons that we feel like conversations about God and faith are resisted in our country is just that it's so complex and so hard to have a conversation about it.
I remember seeing it. I don't remember what movie it was, but there was a African-American attorney and a white liberal attorney talking, and they were like saying something about, well, you know, the principles of the country back to, let's say, to Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the, you know, Bill of Rights, and actually he didn't write the Bill of Rights, but never mind that. And the black lawyer says, well, Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. And he said, then how about just to the Bill of Rights? And the black attorney said, yes, to the Bill of Rights. However it got there, you know, we don't know how it got there through these crazy people or these people who wanted to maintain their power and privilege, but somehow they came up with principles that make sense on a level. And how did that happen? You read it and you see within the Bill of Rights, for, you know, with maybe a few bad drafting here and there. We don't know what the Second Amendment meant, you know, a lot of stuff. But a few things, the aspirations of it are something that are really hard to deny. And, you know, as to what it represents. And even if the details are written wrong and it left stuff out, and whether or not, you know, the Ninth Amendment allows us to add things in, it started a process. And even if the people were flawed and the system was more than flawed, was horrendous on some ways, you know, we're coming out of the Middle Ages. We're coming out of a long history of slavery that went back 10,000 years to at any point that we had accumulated wealth. And so do those aspirations, we don't have to get caught up too much in the American project, but just in general, as we're trying to climb out of this and trying to be better people, both individually and collectively, what does that mean? And it means we, despite everything we see, you know, about people just wanting to acting in their own self-interest and acting in ways that are hateful and violent, that there's something in what we're doing as a society that's worth aspiring to be better. And that's, you know, I'm not articulating it really well at the moment, but we even talk in the socialist movement, you know, socialism is an aspiration. We may never get to the perfect utopia, but we want to move closer to it. And the same thing with the principles of democracy and liberty and all of that. We may never actually get there, but we can continue to move closer and closer and closer to it. We'll always find ways to oppress each other. We're very creative that way, maybe, or maybe not. You know, maybe we will reach some point of enlightenment and, you know, or that. But the question is it's worth trying, it's worth pushing, because we can see elements of progress. And,
yes.
And, you know, and when the, particularly when the oppressed groups and their allies, managed to make a change. It doesn't mean it's over, ever. Slavery ended, but the legacy of slavery stuck around and lives with us today. Women got the vote and possibly equality under the 14th Amendment, though we were afraid to affirm it in an actual, equal rights amendment. But even when the law says we're equal, it doesn't mean that the society sometimes lags behind quite a bit. And so the question is when we see evidence of when we don't seem to be making progress, we elect an African American who's also kind of comes across as being enlightened and intelligent as president, and 8 years later we seem to be moving back on those aspirations. Is there progress? Is there such a thing as progress? Is there evidence of progress? And maybe it differs if you're looking over decades as opposed to centuries. Centuries, we seem to be making progress. Decades, who knows? And so, how do we have faith that, it's going to be better or that it can be better?
Well, that is really, I think you've outlined the complexity that sometimes feels like resistance. And so how do you have faith? Actually, I think the question is, how do you remain faithful to the process? Because we don't know what the outcome is going to be. We're having an experiment with democracy, it's a
democratically oriented republic
here in the United States.
Yeah,
we're having this experiment, and it has provided some stability, but the universe is having an experiment with human beings,
mm-hmm.
and this whole unique thing that the universe is doing in us, in terms of equipping us to be conscious and conscious of our consciousness, and then what will we do with it, and can right. we evolve so that we might survive and learn again to live in harmony on the earth? So your question is, what does it mean to believe in God? What does it mean to be a person of faith in this complex setting? I want to say, of course, I cannot answer as an authority for everyone, or even as an authority for Unitarian
right.
Universalists.
Yeah.
I can talk in general terms about what Unitarian Universalism is,
mm-hmm.
and I can talk also about an approach that I find helpful,
Let me break in here, I told you a joke before, which I'm sure you've heard a million times, but basically Unitarian Universalists believe in at most one God, or maybe more, or maybe less, right? So the question is, the way sort of somebody who's rooted in secularism like me looks to God is, I see it as the personification of something that is transcendent, something that, gives us hope that the universe can change, that things can be better, that there's a connection between us, even when it seems like the connections just aren't there. So, what does God mean to people? Some people, it's an old man with a white beard with powers, and quite a few people believe that, or some variation of that, maybe not quite the way I just described it, but and then there are those who don't really personify it, but see it as a sort of a transcendent force that guides and maybe was part of the creation process or whatever, but this goes back when I was I've talked about this on my show before, where when I was younger, I was raised an atheist, strict atheist, pretty much. I mean, I did not believe that there was anything more than the material. Some things happened to me in college that loosened up the way I looked at the universe a little bit, and I noticed I was really impressed with what I was saw to be the religious left, the people who were working at the time Sanctuary, the people who were holding candlelight vigils to protest the death penalty at San Quentin, you know, and there was a difference about it. There were, you know, I think in the secular, we're all hoping to create a better world, and we've got our anger and we've got our goals and our specific political goals. But I think I was attracted to the religious left because it emphasized the humility, you know, well, you know, that I'm going to make the effort and I don't know what kind of effects it's going to have. That's in God's hands. But I know that if I see something wrong, I need to make the effort to do it. And maybe my small effort will have some impact. Maybe it won't. But just making the effort, just alone, just the effort makes the world a little bit better place.
Yes.
So, okay, yeah. So yes. So I guess the question is, you know, how do we keep that? And so many of us who've been politically active get burned out. I just like feel like, God, I don't see progress. I see us going backwards, right? And we see so many of the things that we fought for coming undone, and could be a lot more before it gets better again. You know, so when you're in one of those downturns, do we have faith that the spiral is going to take us up out of the valley again?
And the distinction that I make is between having faith and being faithful.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know how things are going to come out. If we call ourselves to be faithful to the process and faithful to the values as best we know, then in that process, there will be the influence of those values. I want to take just a little step back, mm-hmm, to how we might talk about this. And this is just a brief advertisement for Humboldt,
sure,
State University and the Religious Studies Department. Mm-hmm. These questions that you and I are talking about, you're a lawyer, and right, I'm a country pastor, mm-hmm, and there is a whole field of really thoughtful academic questioning and answering about what religion is in our society and the role of religion and why religion might be valuable for us. And so at Humboldt State University, a long history of religious studies. Harry Wells was chair of the department for a long time, and a number of friends that we know were adjunct faculty, Rabbi Naomi and
Steinberg, yes.
Rabbi Naomi Steinberg and Karen Don Harris, and and Karen has a partner, and I can't think of his name. You might remember, but I believe he's still on faculty. And my apologies to him because I'm slipping.
Sure.
But currently now there's a new chair of the department, a man named Vince Biondo, there are classes that Vince and his faculty are running. So it's religion and justice, religion and economics, religion and the environment, taking a really great academic approach. So we shine light on these really complicated issues. And I think that is very commendable, and back to the whole process of creating a civil dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's really important. Now to to jump in, for what my answers are as a Unitarian Universalist to what it means to believe in God or to be a person of faith in these complex times. Well, for Unitarian Universalists, there's not a requirement that you believe in God. First of all, that whole notion of what is God, what is ultimate reality, how do we name it? You really do need to be open to dealing with a lot of thoughtful questions. And human beings, and religion is a human-created thing, of course,
sure,
around the world. You have to be open to to understanding that people look at things differently and describe things differently. So in Hinduism, there's, of course, a pantheon of various values that are embodied in various gods. But there's the concept of a creative force that's Brahma, a sustaining force that's Vishnu, mm-hmm. and a force that winds things up. Shiva is called the
right.
destroyer.
But it's about renewing.
But it's really about everything when it takes physical form, is born and lives and then dies and returns to the energy. So concepts like that can just be really very helpful.
Right.
So in Unitarian Universalism, we don't say you have to believe in God. What holds us together is an agreement about faithfulness.
Mm-hmm.
We say, to the best of our ability, we're going to affirm and promote our principles, which include affirming and promoting the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That comes right out of the Enlightenment thought that's in
right.
our Constitution. It's self-evident.
The postulate, self-evident.
Yeah. Are created equal.
Right.
That's a faith stance.
Yeah, sure.
In the value of each person that we feel called to faithfully honor that. And our second principle is that we covenant to be faithful, to affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in our own lives and in the world around us. And these things, we don't use God talk, or you don't have to use God talk, although some people do. But it's a commitment to these values.
And even when some people do use God, there's different ideas of what that means.
And certainly in Unitarian Universalism, you can't say God without acknowledging the goddess.
Yes, that's right.
the great Mother Earth.
Yeah.
And so when we say we don't have a creed, we have a covenant, and then we also say we affirm the diversity in our approach and how we feed our spirits, because it's like diet. Not everybody wants to eat the same thing.
Sure.
Not everybody's nurtured by the same thing. We affirm when we talk about our sources, we affirm the wisdom from earth-centered spirituality that reminds us to live in harmony with the natural world. And that goes back. We hear at Humboldt State and out in Bayside, we're on Wiat land. Those people lived in harmony with the earth for 10,000 years before Europeans came.
Yeah.
And you know, they didn't mess it up too badly, did they?
Yeah. Well, you made a point about the goddess too. Just reminded me of a point. I don't want to get too sidetracked on it, but I saw a debate when I was in college that was really impressive. And there was a woman who was a theologian, feminist theologian, who came in and talked about, well, we need to talk about the male and female aspects of God and the goddess. And she was debating a Christian who really believed that, you know, faith just comes down to basic common sense, Scottish common sense, realism. Christianity doesn't require that you be so esoteric. It says, and if you're going to be common sense, how can a God be both male and female at the same time? And she says, you're saying it's common sense that an entity can be its own father and its own son at the same time?
Yeah.
And it was just, and he had no answer to that. It was really great. It totally took him by surprise, because that is the Trinitarian faith, right? The father and the son are the same entity. And
That's another very complex,
very complex,
very complex a conversation, always so important when we're having a congenial civil conversation to ask, well, what does that mean
right.
to people, and how does that feed their spirits?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to make. To be clear, when I said Unitarian Universalist don't use God talk a lot. Our seventh principle is that in faithfulness, we will affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a tiny part. Yeah. And that, to my way of thinking, there are a number of Unitarian Universalists who wouldn't agree with me.
Sure.
But to my way of thinking, that's one of the world's longer names for what other people call God.
Yeah. And of course, Unitarianism and Universalism both come from a Christian tradition that has evolved.
Yes.
Unitarian, as I understand it, was actually a response to Trinitarianism at a certain point. That it was the unified universalist believed that in God in a lot of the traditional ways, but they believed that everybody would eventually be reach salvation.
That's absolutely correct.
Right.
You have been paying attention when you've come to fellowship. Thank you.
Yeah, it's that way. Also, it was the first Christian, and I would say it's more culturally Christian than literally Christian at this point, but you know, kind of using that term. But it was the first to ordain women, right? Denomination.
There's always there can be argumentation about that, but one of the first women ordained was ordained in the Universalist tradition.
Right.
But the point that you make about kind of the cultural aspects of Unitarian Universalism, we were born on both sides of the house, both the Unitarians and the Universalists, out of the Christian tradition. So we weren't born out of Buddhism or Islam. So our style of Sunday worship is...
Rooted in the tradition, the patterns.
Rooted, it's kind of like a low Protestant way we worship.
We sing,
sing,
yeah.
So in feel, I was just really amazed the first time I went to a Reformed Jewish service because, oh man, I can see where we came from. Reformed Jewish services, there's scripture, there's prayer, there's song, and the rabbi says some words of wisdom, there's much that's similar. So, but the point that's difficult for Unitarian Universalists is just the challenge of remaining faithful to the values that we claim, because inevitably, some days we're better than others in living those values out.
Sure.
And so then that's when our sources really matter. And I want to say also, and you alluded to this just a little bit, but I think one of the, and I may have alluded to it previously too, one of the things that's difficult to deal with is when we talk about religious ideas, they're personal and they affect the way we make meaning, and there's vulnerability and tenderness around them. And it's just really important whoever we're talking to, that we're listening, and we find out what their faith means to them.
Great.
And so Unitarian Universalists around the country really work at working with other people with similar values, though they may come out of different
traditions.
Different traditions. So here in Humboldt County, the Unitarian Universalists are working with True North Organizing, along with Buddhists and Jews.
And evangelical and Christians.
Catholics and evangelical Christians.
Who we tend to see, whenever we hear the term evangelical Christian, at least for me, it does sometimes conjure up a negative image from my political point of view, but it's really a diverse tendency, you know, much more diverse than gets projected.
I think that is the thing, to take a breath and say, well, what does it mean to this person who finds solace for her soul or his soul in an evangelical approach to Christianity.
Right.
Because those people so often do share values with us, particularly when they're folks from immigrant communities whose loved ones are in danger of being deported.
Yes. But even historically, they've been the foundation of the civil rights movement, the foundation of a lot of the trade union movement. In history, the abolitionist movement before that, and even to some degree, the women, early women's movement. There have been quite a few Christian influences in that. We tend to think of it as secular, especially since the 60s, but it wasn't always, the progressive movements weren't always secular in the sense that we understand it.
That is absolutely true. So of course, we bring up Martin Luther King Jr., who was a committed evangelical Christian, and Jesus and justice went together for him. And Bernie Sanders is a prophetic Jewish person who is in touch in his heart, in his soul, with the prophet Isaiah. And Jesus read the prophet Isaiah. Jesus was also a Jewish prophet.
Right.
And when he read the prophet Isaiah to announce his ministry, he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, and he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor, to set at liberty all those who are oppressed, to heal the brokenhearted, to set the captives free." And that, speaking of complexity of his time, that his understanding of Judaism was that God was there for the common people, in and amidst the common people, and that ran against the oppression, both that was happening in a more rigid form of Judaism and the oppression of the Roman Empire.
Right.
And it made him very unpopular.
Hold that thought. I got to do a little bit of business here. We are... You're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. My name is Eric Kirk. Reverend Brian Jessup is my guest. We are talking about faith, religion, and God in 21st century United States. The phone number, if you want to join the conversation, 826-4805 if you're local, and 1-800-640-5911 if you're calling from out of the area. That's 826-4805. Or 800-640-5911. You can always go to the website to find the phone number if you need it. But if you want to join us, let me ask you, Ben, we're kind of going from topic to topic here. I definitely want to invite you back and keep this discussion going for future shows. And there's no way we could even do this any justice in an hour, and we're already halfway through it. But, you know, you just brought something up. You were citing sort of gospel of, you know, the set the captives free. I know that one of the criticisms that came from, particularly from the white, and not just the slave owning Christians, but white Christians in general, of what are referred to as the Negro spirituals, is that there was so much emphasis on the Old Testament, particularly on the leaving Egypt and slavery of Egypt, and not enough on Jesus. They said, you know, I can't imagine why that would be, right? it seemed to be focused so much on what's the name of the book that they leave?
The Exodus.
Thank you. You know, whereas it wasn't emphasized in the white churches as much. Gee, you know, I mean, it's just there. And so sometimes the different perspectives and different emphasis, you might have the same religion, but they kind of emphasize different aspects of the faith. Different parts of Scripture have different meaning to them. And so sometimes even within the same faith, you're looking at the same thing from two different perspectives. You're going to emphasize something different. So if you've got white slave owners who are reading from the same book and drawing completely different conclusions from the people who are making them nervous singing songs about getting out of Egypt. You know, I mean, what does that mean in terms of the religion? Who is it there for? And what's its unifying force? It almost seems to be failing in that respect, in that you got these two very distinct perspectives coming from the same book.
So that is a part of the complexity. So what we have to understand is that religion is something that holds us together, from the Latin re ligare, to rebind, to bind us together. And it can bind us together as individual people and as a society, but it can be used to bind us under oppression. So here's an interesting thing that happened to the message of Jesus. Jesus was a Jewish prophet, the first Jewish prophet, if not the first, one of the prototypes, was mm-hmm. Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And what was his message? His message was to an oppressive regime, and his message was what?
Let my people go. Right.
Let my people be people. The inherent worth and dignity of everyone. My people, God's people. We're all God's people. Let my people go. So is it any wonder? And that has happened again and again in Judaism. We just have finished the celebration of Hanukkah, which was a set of Jewish prophets saying to the Romans this time, rather than the Egyptians, let my people go. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, with the Maccabees, it was the Syrian Greeks.
Right.
And then 200 years later, Jesus was delivering the Moses message to the Romans, let my people go, let my people be people. That is the quintessential revolutionary message of Judaism. And so that was fairly powerful in the Roman Empire. And then in the year 312, that message was co-opted by Constantine.
Right.
And it became the religion of the empire. And rather than being persecuted, it was mm-hmm. adopted.
Right.
And what happened then, within a couple of years, the Christian community changed, because the early Christian community was communal
mm-hmm.
and pacifistic. And after it was adopted by the Roman Empire, it became obligatory for Christian men to serve in the Roman legions.
And so it went from Pax Christi to Pax Romana.
That is exactly the point. So our brother Karl Marx says religion then becomes the opiate of the masses.
Right.
And it becomes True North has a wonderful it's Pico has a wonderful African-American minister who's come here, and I will think of his name, because right now, you know, I'm on the radio and I'm not sure. Thinking of it immediately. But this guy's a very powerful minister, and he says to those of us organizing with True North, who are religious leaders, are you a chaplain of the empire, or are you a prophet of mm-hmm. the resistance? And we hope to be prophets of the resistance, which means, honestly, that we hope to embody those values that will say the earth matters and each person matters, and it's the job of religion to call us back to our better selves. And Unitarian, great, Ralph Waldo Emerson, says, you know, it's really not even a matter of if you have religion. He says you will have religion. Emerson says a person will worship something Mm-hmm. Have no doubt about that. We may think our tribute is paid in secret in the dark recesses of our hearts, but our religion will come out. That which dominates our imaginations and our thoughts is what we worship. That which dominates our imagination and our thoughts is what we worship. And it will determine our lives and our character. Therefore, it behooves us to be careful of what we worship. For what we are worshiping, we will become.
Right.
So what we truly worship, most of us, and we're trying to get over it, psychologist Eric Fromm in his book, Psychoanalysis and Religion, says we may think we worship God or love or justice, but for most of us, what is really central for us is security or possibly material wealth or social status and social approbation.
A great author. My introduction to him was actually, he wrote Marx's Concept of Man. That was actually one of the books that drew me into Marxism for a while.
Yes.
I don't really subscribe to all of its tenets, but it addressed the issue of alienation, which is a very spiritual concept that comes out of Marxism. Alienation is the primary thing that people suffer under oppression, according to Marx. And and you know, the separation of what you do from who you are and the rest. So it's interesting. He also wrote a great book called Escape from Freedom. I think he's one of the more profound thinkers, but worthwhile. But that is interesting. Emerson is somebody who is quoted by people of all different faiths and all different political persuasions, too.
Yes.
Welch, who started the John Birch Society, felt he was a very profound character. I'm like, wait a minute, how can Welch and I like the same person, you know, appreciate the same philosopher? And that's, you know.
Well, and it, it all comes back to what do you mean by?
Exactly.
What do you mean by? So Emerson was big on self-reliance, but he was a privileged white male.
Sure.
And what he was a person of his time and of his social class. And he was the product of 6 or 7 generations of Harvard-educated people.
Wasn't there a quote, because he had a little bit of he was friends with Thoreau, but they had some differences of opinion. And I think there was like something where if Thoreau was in prison for something, I don't remember what, but something involving his activism. And Emerson says, what are you doing in there? And Thoreau says, what are you doing out there? You
know, that's exactly right. Yeah. So again, in the conversation, always important to know to know there's always a wide gap for all of us, even our greatest folks. There's a wide gap between who they intend to be and who they are. Thomas Jefferson said, for instance, I shudder when I think that God is just. Because Jefferson was self-aware enough to know some of his own.
Yes, first draft of the Declaration of Independence was anti-slavery, and yet he was a slave owner till he died, and that's one of our big contradictions.
Yes.
And of course, that's a very complicated story we can't get into, but
talking about what we worship is. It's a complicated thing, what we intend to have as our values. And it also, our faith and the expression of it really is intermingled with where we are in society and what we have the privilege to have the time to think about. So I'm a white guy, and I got to go to college, and I have the ability to think about this. Other people are living at a different level in the interconnected web of things, where they're just scrambling, and they may need a faith that is less cognitive and more emotive, just just a song to get by. There's a songwriter named Jan Phillips who has a little chant that is helpful for everybody, and it goes, I will not leave you comfortless. I will not leave you alone. I am the air you breathe in. I'm the light of every star and every dawn. I will not leave you comfortless. There's the role of faith to comfort us when we're... and that's why people are sometimes afraid to take a step back and take a look at it, at what they believe, because life is so tough. Yeah. They just need something to hold on to that will get them through.
Right.
And then, if basic needs are met, and this is why really it is on the heart of so many folks who believe that Jesus and justice go together,
right.
And that in fact the Jewish prophets and justice go together, and that Islam and justice go together,
right.
It's that the way our society is set up, I don't think it's arguable that the predominant values, the predominant things we worship are wealth and power, mm-hmm. and military might. And there was the Roman Empire, but now, oh my goodness, God help us, there's the American Empire. And I don't mean there's not a bunch of great stuff about our country, but we're an empire, and Martin King pointed out any country that's spending exorbitantly more on military expenditures than it is on caring for and building up its own people and helping other people in the world, that country is a bankrupt country spiritually.
As we're fighting now the longest war, the war with no expiration date, in Afghanistan and other places, and we just are now sort of accepting a permanent state of war as something that we don't think about, but it's
since the beginning of our country 220 some years ago, we have been pretty much constantly at war,
mm-hmm.
and so it may be as we begin, well, we fight for our freedom against Great Britain. Meanwhile, we're oppressing Native American folks, but we're fighting the white European settlers are fighting against Great Britain. But then it pretty much has just been war after war.
Yeah.
Possibly because we're afraid, and also just because there's so much money to be made in the war industry, and it's hard to convert. It's hard to get to that place where we're going to beat our swords into plowshares.
Right.
But the job of folks of faith is to keep reminding. The job of folks of a particular kind of faith, anyway, and it certainly is the faith of Unitarian Universalists, it's our job to faithfully keep the pressure on and say, this way is leading us to death, an environmental disaster.
All right, we'll take that back. Let me just give out the phone numbers one more time. You're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. Reverend Brian Jessup is my guest. We are talking about faith in the 21st century, and maybe we'll take it back to that in a minute. The phone number, if you want to join, and we are getting towards the top of the hour, so if you want to call, this is probably a good time, 826-4805. Or 800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. So we have this society that we've been at war just about every minute since we've been in existence, and probably even before the founding of the country, because the wars with Native Americans started right off and never really slowed down with ebbs and flows. And even after that, it's pretty much hard to name a country that we haven't been involved involved with somehow, if not with overt military aggression, with subtle manipulations and the rest. So where do we find the faith that we can change that? I mean, here we are in the center of empire, as we like to call it. You know, maybe our influence is less in certain areas than it was before, but the military spending just keeps going up, up, and up. I mean, and we're about ready to militarize our southern border. Even further, it's already militarized, but we're about ready to...
Well, we certainly have militarized our local police departments, mm-hmm. and we've criminalized poverty. Right. And so we build prisons instead of really working to give people jobs. So once again, that is why I keep going back to my distinction. There's faithfulness. We're just called to faithfulness, and called to the notion that as we are faithful, our values will flow through us. And that eventually, and it may be a long eventually humankind will evolve. At this point, we understand that there is undeniably, we've done it for thousands of years. There's a warlike quality, a competitive quality to human beings. And there is also a collaborative quality. There's a compassionate quality. And we are completely out of balance at this point, of course. But through faithfulness, by continuing to show up, and continuing to show up in a way that you mentioned at the beginning, where you said there was a difference in the quality of the protests from just the folks who were angry and mm-hmm. secular, and the quality of protest by Dr. King.
Yes, absolutely. I noticed it. I still notice it, but it was really prevalent to me at the time.
There's a new Poor People's Campaign is being organized by Reverend William Barber on the East Coast, North Carolina, I think. Mm-hmm. He's a Disciples of Christ minister, an African-American minister. And so this year, starting on Mother's Day, there's going to be 40 days of faithfulness and 40 days of protests and civil disobedience in state capitals, over 25 state capitals. California will have protests. And then on June 21st, there's going to be a grand Poor People's March on Washington. And there's principles that go with this. Nonviolence is certainly part of it. And I should have brought that list of mm-hmm. principles, but it has to do with care for one another, care for the earth, care for immigrant people in times of climate change, care for vulnerable people all over the planet, that we lift up this countervailing set of values and say it really is time to beat our swords into plowshares. It's time for us to, And in that movement, Reverend Barber says, and atheists are welcome. Right. It's the values. You don't have to believe in God. What you do have to believe in is that love and right relationship, and carrying that out in our own lives and in our political realm, will make a difference. If not that it will make a difference, at least we're going to be faithful to the effort. And so I think that
sure. I mean, you know, faith is kind of defined as by some as belief without evidence or feeling without evidence. But, you know, there's sometimes also being faithful helps you look for the evidence. I mean, the United States may not have slowed down in our sort of warlike activities, but the world is slowing down. We are actually have fewer wars now than ever in the history of humanity right now in terms of proportionality. Unfortunately, our country is involved in probably more than half of them that are happening. But it's that's not to say that war is taking different forms. It's not really between nations anymore. It's as much as it is between ideologies and interests and the rest. But definitely looking at it, there does seem to be some progress in that. Now, how long it can last, if there's economic downturns globally and fights over depleting resources, who knows? But there does seem to be a basis, not necessarily for faith, but a basis for hope with that. And you know, it would be nice if we kind of caught up with the world in that sense, because there are a lot of nations that have been at each other's odds for, you know, decades that seem to be starting to work it out. Exceptions, mostly in the Middle East, but in a few other areas as well, in Africa, and even at least one, you know, kind of border dispute in Europe, or I think the Ukraine and Russia is still Europe, but it's so hope can be bared by evidence, but being faithful and having faith, that's sort of defined as having the belief without need for evidence. And I don't know, it's just sometimes you need to find some evidence of something to keep it going, it feels like.
Well, yeah. we're surrounded by evidence really all the time. We evidence of the goodness of folks surrounds us at all times, and to be part of that is really important. There's around this country, there's tremendous and undeniable efforts to adjust the way we live so we have less impact on
that we aren't 6% of the world's population consuming 40-50% of its resources.
We have a tremendous amount of work, an unbelievable amount of work to do.
Right.
And unfortunately, things will probably get worse on the planet before they get better. But it isn't like there isn't ongoing effort now. There's tremendous effort around Humboldt County to do something around the needs of homeless people, and so we have a number of agencies that are working really hard, and the County Board of Supervisors is considering now. They've appointed a subcommittee to look at declaring a shelter crisis, and also then forming a task committee to work on homelessness, to begin to meet those needs. So those kinds of things are really helpful.
Evidence.
And when you look at things that are happening in our schools with our kids, that HSU survives. That's a
well. Why don't we're getting down to 1 minute here. Why don't you want to kind of wrap it up, and we will pick this up again, and I will take the names that you gave me to also continue. But
yes, I really do. I recommend before you talk with me again, you really you're going to be delighted when you meet Vince.
All right,
Vince Biondo. So here's just a quick poem by Bishop Torabindo Quimara, who's a Unitarian Universalist in the Philippines, and he says, "Oh, the beauty of a life that illumines honor anew, that models wise and gracious ways to every seeker, that every day shall serve in joy and do the right. Oh, praise the life who shows, whose beauty shows a justice true.
Right. Next time, maybe we'll have you sing that, right? You did earlier. All right. Thank you very much, Brian, for coming in. Thank you, Michael, for engineering. And we will be back. We will take this up again. And
thank you, Eric. It was wonderful to be here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thanks to our host, Eric Kirk, and to our guest, Reverend Brian Jessup. We'd love to get feedback on our programs. Please email thursdaynighttalk@khsu.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU.